house, and Jody knew they were nearing Fort Butler. Around a bend in the road, the dry growth of pines and scrub oak disappeared. There was a new lushness. Sweet gums and bay were here, and, like signposts indicating the river, cypress. Wild azaleas were blooming late in the low places, and the passion flower opened its lavender corollas along the road. They reached the St. John's River. It was dark and aloof. It seemed to slide toward the ocean, indifferent to its own banks and to the men who crossed or used it. Jody stared at it. It was a pathway to the world. Penny shouted across it to summon the ferry from the Volusia side. A man crossed over for them with a rough raft of hewn logs. They crossed back, watching the slow sweep of the river current. Penny paid his ferriage, and they walked up the curving shell road and into the Volusia store. Penny hailed the proprietor.
Howdy, Mr. Boyles. How do this feller look to you?
Too good for the steamboat, but capo on it.
What's venison worth?
The same. $1.50 a saddle. I'll swear those city folks traveling up and down the river hollering for venison. It ain't half as good as pork, and you and me, we know it.
Penny hauled the deer to the big meat block and began the skinning.
Yes, he agreed, but if a feller's pot-bellied and can't get out and shoot it for himself, I reckon venison has a mighty fancy taste to him.
They laughed together. Penny was a welcome trader at the store, as much for his wit and his stories as his business. Boyles himself was judge and arbiter and encyclopedia for the small community. He stood now in the close, odorous dusk of his store like a captain in the hold of a ship. His wares included the necessities and scanty luxuries of the whole countryside, from plows, wagons, buggies, and implements, through food staples to whiskey and hardware, dry goods and notions and medicines.
Now, one forequarter, I'll call back by for tomorrow to carry home to my wife. The other one goes to Grandma Hutto, Penny said.
Bless her old soul, Boyle said. Why I say old soul, I don't know. If a man's wife was as young-hearted as Grandma Hutto, why, living it'd be a feast.
Jody walked along the length of the glass case under the counter. There were sweet crackers and an assortment of candies. There were Barlow knives and the new Rogers. There were shoestrings, buttons, thread, and needles. The coarser wares were on shelves that lined the walls. Buckets and pitchers, lard oil lamps and basins, the new kerosene lamps, coffee pots and cast iron skillets and Dutch ovens nestled together like strange birds, fledglings in one nest. Beyond the utensils were the dress goods, calico and Osnaburg, denim and shoddy, domestic and homespun. A few bolts of alpaca and linsey and broadcloth were thick with dust. There was little sale for such luxuries, especially in the summer. At the back of the store were the groceries, hams and cheeses and bacons. There were barrels of sugar and flour and meal and grits and green coffee beans, sacks of potatoes, kegs of syrup, barrels of whiskey. Nothing here was tempting, and Jody wandered back to the glass case. A rusty mouth organ lay on top of a pile of licorice strings. He was tempted for a moment to trade in his deer hide and buy the mouth organ so that he could play to Grandma Hutto or accompany the foresters. But Grandma would probably prefer the deer hide. Boyles called to him.
Young man, your daddy doesn't come to trade too often. I'll treat you to a dime's worth of anything you take a notion to.
He looked over the assortment hungrily.
I reckon the mouth organ's worth more'n a dime.
Well, yes, but it's been there a good while now.
Take it and welcome.
Jody cast a last look at the candies, but Grandma Hutto would have sweets for him. He said,
Thank you, sir.
Boyle said,
Your boy's mannerly, Mr. Baxter. He's right smart of a comfort, Penny said. We lost so many young'uns, I think sometimes I set too much store by him.
Jody glowed with a sense of virtue. He longed to be good and noble. He turned back to the counter to garner the reward of his character. He glanced up at a motion by the door. Boyles's niece, Eulalie, stood gaping at him. He was flooded instantly with hate. He hated her because his father had teased him. He hated her hair hanging in tight pigtails. He hated her freckles, more lavish than his own. He hated her squirrel teeth, her hands, her feet, and every bone in her lank body. He leaned over swiftly and picked a small potato from a sack and lifted it. She eyed him venomously. Slowly, she flickered her tongue at him like a garter snake. She clasped two fingers over her nose in a gesture of malodorous disgust. He hurled the potato. It struck her on the shoulder, and she retreated with shrieks of anguish. Penny said, "Why, Jody?" Boyles advanced, frowning. Penny said sternly,
"Get right out in here. Mr. Boyles, he can't have the mouth organ."
He went outside into the hot sunlight. He was humiliated. Yet, if he had it to do over again, he would throw another potato at her, a larger one. When his business was done, Penny joined him. He said,
"I'm sorry you seed fit to shame me. Maybe your ma's right. Maybe you hadn't ought to have no truck with the Foresters."
Jody scuffled his feet in the sand.
"I don't care. I hate her."
"I don't know what to say. How on earth come you to do it?"
"I just hate her. She made a face at me. She's ugly."
"Well, son, you can't go through life chucking things at all the ugly women you meet."
Jody spat unrepentant in the sand.
"Well," Penny said, "I don't know what Grandma Huddle'll say."
"Oh, Paul, don't tell her. Please don't tell her."
Penny was ominously silent.
"I'll be mannerly, Paul."
"I don't know whether she'll take this hide from you now or not."
"Leave me have it, Paul. I'll not chunk nothing at nobody again, if you'll not tell Grandma."
"All right, this time. But don't let me catch you at such as that again. Take your deer hide."
His spirits lifted. The menacing cloud moved away. They turned north up a path that paralleled the river. Magnolias were in bloom along it. Beyond, there was a lane of oleanders. These too were blossoming. Redbirds flew ahead down the lane. The oleanders led to a gate in a white picket fence. Grandma Huddle's flower garden was a bright patchwork quilt thrown down inside the pickets. Her small white cottage was bound to the substantial earth with vines of honeysuckle and jessamine. Everything here was dear and familiar. Jody ran down the path through the garden, through the patch of indigo in feathery rose-lavender bloom. He called,
"Hey, Grandma!"
Light steps sounded inside the cottage, and she was on the doorstep.
"Jody, you scamp!"
He ran to her. Penny called,
"Don't knock her down, boy!"
She braced her small frame. He squeezed her until she squeaked.
"You tormented bear cub," she said.
She began to laugh, and he tipped back his head to laugh with her and watch her face. It was pink and wrinkled. Her eyes were as black as gallberries. They opened and shut when she laughed, and the wrinkles rippled out from the sides. She shook up and down, and her small, plump breast quivered like a quail dusting. Jody sniffed at her like a puppy. He said,
Grandma, you smell good."
Penny said,
"That's more'n you can say for us, Grandma. We're a dirty pair of somebodies."
"'Tain't nothing but hunting smell," Jody said. "Deer hide and leaves and such, and sweating." "It's a dandy smell," she said. "I'm just lonesome for boy smell and man smell."
Penny said,
"Anyway, here's our excuse us. Fresh venison."
"And the hide," Jody said, "for a rug for you. It's mine. I wounded it."
She lifted her hands in the air. Their gifts became at once of great value. It seemed to Jody that he could bring in a panther single-handed in return for her approval. She touched meat and hide. Penny said,
"Now don't dirty them little hands."
She drew gallantry from men as the sun drew water. Her pertness enchanted them. Young men went away from her with a feeling of bravado. Old men were enslaved by her silver curls. Something about her was forever female and made all men virile. Her gift infuriated all women. Ma Baxter had returned to the clearing from her 4 years in her house with an acute dislike. The older woman returned it with good measure. Penny said, "Leave me tote the meat to the kitchen, and I'd best tack the hide to your shed wall to cure for you." Jody called, "Here, Fluff." The white dog came racing. He bounded at Jody like a ball and leaped at his face to lick it. Grandma said, "He's as proud to see you as if 'twas some of his kinfolks." Fluff caught sight of old Julia, sitting sedately on her haunches. He stiffened and advanced to her. Julia sat without stirring, her long ears drooping. Grandma said, "I like that dog. She looks just like my Aunt Lucy." Penny went to the rear of the cottage with the venison and the hide. They were all welcome here, father and son and battle-scarred hound. Jody felt more at home than when he returned to his own mother. He said, "I reckon you wouldn't be so proud to see me. Did you have to put up with me all the time?" Grandma chuckled. "You've heard your ma say that. Did she quarrel about you coming?" "Not so terrible as sometimes." "Your father," she said tartly, "married a woman all hell couldn't amuse." She lifted a finger in the air. "I bet you want to go swimming." "In the river?" "Smack in the river. When you come out, I'll give you clean clothes, some of Oliver's."
She didn't caution him against alligators or moccasins or against the river current. It was good to have it taken for granted that he had a little sense of his own. He ran down the path to the landing. The river flowed deep and dark. It made a rippling sound against the banks, but the great liquid heart of it moved silently. Only the swift progress of fallen leaves showed the current. Jody hesitated a moment on the wooden landing, then dove in. He came up gasping with the coldness and struck upstream. He kept close to the bank where the current ran less swiftly. He made almost no progress. The dark vegetation towered on either side of the river. He was pinned between banks of live oaks and cypresses. He pretended that an alligator was behind him and swam desperately. He passed one spot and then, laboriously, another, dog paddling. He wondered if he could swim as far as the upper landing, where the ferry crossed and the river steamers halted. He fought his way toward it. A cypress knee offered anchorage, and he clung to it and caught his wind. He set out again. The landing looked far away. His shirt and breeches interfered with his freedom. He wished he had gone in naked. Grandma wouldn't have minded. He wondered what his mother would have said if he had told her the foresters had played and sung naked. He looked over his shoulder. Hutto's landing had disappeared around the bend. He was suddenly not happy in the fluid darkness. He turned around. The current caught him, and he shot downstream. He struggled to approach the bank. Watery tentacles held him. He thought in a panic that he might be swept on to Volusia Bar, to Great Lake George itself, even perhaps the sea. He fought blindly, reaching for whatever might be solid under him. He found himself grounding a little above the landing. In relief, he drifted cautiously down to it and climbed up on the wooden platform. He drew a deep breath. The panic left him, and he was exhilarated by the cold water and the danger. Penny was on the landing. His father said,
"That were right smart of a tussle. Reckon I'll just ease around the edge to get me my wash."
He dropped cautiously from the landing. He said,
"Now I don't aim to take my feet off on the ground. My day for capers is over."
He came out of the water shortly. They returned to the rear of the cottage. Grandma Hutto had clean clothes waiting for them. For Penny, there were garments of the long-dead Mr. Hutto, musty with age. For Jody, there were shirt and breeches that Oliver had worn and outgrown many years ago. Grandma said,
"They say you get to use things again if you save them every 7 years. How many's 2 times 7, Jody?"
14. Penny said.
Don't ask him no further. That schoolteacher me and the foresters boarded last winter didn't scarcely know hisself.
Well, lots of things is more important than book learning.
I know that, but a feller needs to know to read and write and figure. But Jody's getting along right good with what I can make out to learn him.
They dressed in the shed. They smoothed back their hair with their hands and felt clean and strange in the borrowed clothing. Jody's freckled face shone. His tawny hair lay wet and smooth. They put on their own shoes and wiped away the dust with their discarded shirts. Grandma Hutto called to them, and they went into the cottage. Jody smelled its familiar odor. He had never been able to disentangle its elements. The sweet lavender she used on her clothing was plain. There were dried grasses in a jar before the fireplace. There was the unmistakable smell of honey, which she kept in the cupboard. There was pastry, tarts and cookies, and fruitcakes. There was the smell of the soap she used on Fluff's fur. There was the pervasive scent of flowers from the garden outside the windows. And above it all, it came to him at last, lay the smell of the river. The river itself was fluid through the cottage and around it, leaving a whirlpool of odorous dampness and decaying fern. He looked through the open door. A path led through marigolds to the water. The river shone in the late sunlight, guinea gold, like the bright flowers. Its flow drew Jody's mind with it to the ocean, where Oliver rode the storms in ships and knew the world. Grandma brought scuppernong wine and spice cakes. Jody was allowed a glass of wine. It was as clear as juniper springs. Penny smacked his lips over it, but Jody wished it was something sweeter. Blackberry shrub, perhaps. He ate spice cakes absently and stopped in shame to see that he had emptied the plate. This, at home, would be a catastrophe. Grandma went to the cupboard and filled the plate again. She said,
"Don't you spoil your dinner."
"I never know till it's too late."
She went to the kitchen and he followed her. She began to slice venison to broil. He frowned anxiously. The meat was no great treat to the Baxters. She opened the oven door, and he became aware that other things were being cooked. She had an iron cook stove. Food from it was more mysterious than from the open hearth at home. The closed door concealed all manner of things behind its black bosom. The cake had dulled his appetite a little, but the good odors brought it back again. He wandered back and forth from Grandma to his father. Penny sat sunk and quiet in a padded chair in the front room. Shadows lay over him and absorbed him. There wasn't here the excitement of a visit to the foresters. There was instead a snugness that covered him like a warm quilt in winter. It was meat and drink to Penny, harassed at home by all his duties. Jody offered to help in the kitchen, but Grandma sent him away. He rambled into the yard and played with Fluff. Old Julia watched them wonderingly. Romping was as alien to her as to her master. Her black and tan face wore the solemnity of the work dog. Dinner was ready. Grandma Hutto was the only person Jody knew who had a separate room to eat in. Everyone else ate in the kitchen from a scrubbed and bare pine table. Even as she brought in the food, he couldn't take his eyes from the white cloth and the blue plates. Penny said,
"Now, we're a mighty sorry pair of tramps to set down to all these pretties."
But he joked and gossiped with Grandma with an ease he didn't have at his own table. He said to her,
"I'm surprised your sweetheart ain't showed up yet."
Her black eyes snapped.
"Anybody but you said that, Penny Baxter, he'd get pitched in the river."
"The way you done poor Easy yourself, eh?"
"Pity he didn't drown. A man that don't know when he's insulted."
"You'll be obliged to take him yet, to give you the legal right to throw him out."
Jody laughed boisterously. He couldn't listen to them and eat at the same time. He found himself getting behind and settled down to steady eating. There was a bass, fresh from Easy's fish trap in the river, baked whole with a savory stuffing. The Irish potatoes were a treat after the Baxter sweet potatoes 3 times a day. There was early mutton corn. The Baxter seldom ate new corn, for all that was raised seemed more desperately needed for the stock. Jody sighed with his inability to hold everything. He concentrated on light bread and mayhaw jelly. Penny said, "He'll be so spoiled his ma'll have to break him in like a new bird dog." After dinner, they walked together through the garden to the riverbank. Boats passed. The travelers waved to Grandma, and she waved back. Toward sunset, Easy Ozell turned into the path to the cottage to do the evening chores. Grandma eyed her approaching admirer.
"Now don't he look like the back end of bad luck?"
Jody thought that Easy looked like a sick gray crane with feathers draggled by the rain. His hair hung in gray wisps in his neck. He had a long, thin gray mustache that drooped to his jaws. His arms hung like limp wings at his sides.
"Look at him," she said. "Tormented Yankee. His feet drag like a gator's tail."
"He sure ain't pretty," Penny admitted. "But he's humble as a dog."
"I hate a pitiful man," she said. "And I hate anything as bow-legged. He's so bow-legged his breeches near about make a mark on the ground."
Easy shuffled back of the house. Jody heard him with the cow and later at the woodpile. When the evening's work was done, he came timidly to the front steps. Penny shook hands with him and Grandma nodded to him. He cleared his throat. Then, as though his Adam's apple, working up and down, blocked his words, he gave up trying to speak and sat down on the bottom step. The talk flowed about him, and his gray face was bright with content. At twilight, Grandma disappeared inside the house. Easy rose stiffly to go. He said to Penny,
"My, if I could talk like you, maybe she'd take to me better." "You suppose it's that? Or won't she never forgive me being a Yankee? If 'twas that, I'll declare, Penny, I'd spit on the flag."
"Well, you know a woman'll hold an idea like a gator'll hold a shoat. She can't forget the time the Yankees taken her needles and thread and she walked clean to St. Augustine with 3 hen's eggs to trade for a paper of needles. Now, if the Yankees got beat, she'd maybe forgive you."
"But I was beat, Penny. I myself was beat something awful. It was at Bull Run. You rebels whipped us something terrible. My, I hated it."
His memories overcame him. He wiped his eyes.
"You whipped us, and we was 2 to your 1.
He shuffled away.
"Now think of that beat-down human aspiring to Grandma," Penny said. "He sure got a low eye for a high fence."
Inside the cottage, Penny tormented Grandma about Easy, as he had tormented Jody about Eulalie. But she gave back as good as she took, and the bout was good-natured. The subject reminded Jody of the matter that had been on his conscience. He said,
"Grandma, Lem Forrester said Twink Weatherby was his gal. I said she was Oliver's, and Lem didn't like it no little bit."
"Oliver'll likely take care of Lem when he comes home," she said, "if a Forrester knows to fight fair."
She put them to bed in a room as white as the snow that Oliver told of. Jody stretched out beside his father between immaculate sheets. He said,
"Don't Grandma live nice?"
Penny said,
"It's the way some women has." He added loyally, "But don't think hard of your ma for not doing like Grandma. Your ma ain't never had nothing much to do with, and I'm to blame for that, not her. She can't help it, living rough."
Jody said,
"I wished Grandma was really my grandma. I wished Oliver was sure enough kin."
"Well, folks that seem like kin folks is kin folks. You rather live here with Grandma?"
Jody pictured the cabin in the clearing. Hoot owls would be crying, and perhaps the wolves would howl, or a panther scream. The deer would be drinking at the sinkhole, the bucks alone, the does with their fawns. The bear cubs would be curled up in their beds together. There was something at Baxter's Island that was better than white tablecloths and counterpanes.
No, I'd not. I'd just like to take Grandma home to live with us. But we'd have to make Ma mind her,
Penny chuckled.
Poor boy, he said, has got to grow up and learn women.
Chapter 12 Jody heard the freight and passenger steamer pass the Hutto Landing about daylight. He sat up in bed and looked out of the window. The lights of the steamer were pale under the early morning sky. The paddle wheels churned thickly through the water. The steamer blew its thin high whistle at Volusia. He thought he heard it stop and then go on up the river. Somehow its passing concerned him. He couldn't go to sleep again. Outside in the yard, old Julia growled. Penny stirred from his sleep. Watchfulness lived sentinel in his brain. Sounds no heavier than the wind aroused him. He said,
"The steamer stopped. Somebody's coming."
Old Julia barked deeply, then whined and was still.
"It's somebody she knows,"
Jody cried.
"It's Oliver,"
and jumped from the bed. He ran naked through the cottage. Fluff awakened and dashed from his bed by Grandma's door, barking shrilly. A voice shouted,
"Turn out, you lazy landlubbers!"
Grandma ran from her bedroom. She had on a long white nightgown and a white nightcap. She fastened a shawl around her shoulders as she ran. Oliver took the steps in one bound like a buck, and Jody and his mother were on him in a whirlwind. He lifted his mother by the waist and swung her. She thumped him with her small fists. Jody and Fluff yelped for attention. Oliver swung them in turn. Penny joined them sedately, fully dressed. They pumped hands in greeting. In the dim light of dawn, Oliver's teeth flashed white. Grandma's eye caught another flashing.
"Now you just give me them ear bobs, you pirate."
She stood on tiptoe to reach up to his ears. Gold hoops swung from the lobes. She unscrewed them and put them in her own ears. He laughed and shook her, and Fluff barked in a frenzy. In the tumult, Penny spoke.
"Lord save us, Jody, you're plumb naked."
Jody froze in his tracks. He turned to run. Oliver caught him. Grandma pulled the shawl from her shoulders and tied it around his waist. She said,
"I'd have run naked, too, if I'd had to. Oliver don't come home but twice a year. Do we, boy?"
He said,
"It was dark when I set out anyways."
The commotion quieted. Oliver picked up his duffel bag and carried it inside. Jody trailed him.
"Where you been to this time, Oliver? Did you see whales?"
Penny said, "Leave the man catch his breath, Jody. You can't turn out tails for young'uns like a spring turns water."
But Oliver was bursting with his tails.
"That's what a sailor comes home for," he said, "to see his ma and his gal and to tell lies."
His ship had been in the tropics. Jody tore himself away long enough to slip into his borrowed shirt and breeches. He called questions, and Grandma called questions. The homecomer answered back and forth. Grandma, dressed in a flowered dimity and arranged her silver curls with special care. She went to the kitchen to start breakfast. Oliver opened the mouth of his duffel bag and dumped the contents in the middle of the floor. Grandma said,
"I can't look and cook at the same time,"
Oliver said.
"Then, for the Lord's sake, Ma, cook."
"You're thin."
"I'm skin and bones, waiting to get home to eat."
"Jody,
come get that fire to roaring. Slice that ham, slice that bacon, slice that venison."
She took bowls from cupboards, beat eggs and batter. Jody helped her, then ran back to Oliver. The sun rose and flooded the cottage. Oliver and Penny and Jody squatted on their haunches over the contents of the duffel bag. Oliver said,
"I've got something for everybody but Jody. Funny I forgot him."
"You didn't. You ain't never yet forget me."
"See, can you pick out your present?"
Jody passed over a roll of silk. That was, of course, for Grandma. He pushed aside Oliver's clothes, spiced and musty with strange foreign odors. A small packet was wrapped in flannel. Oliver took it out of his hands. That's for my gal. A loose sack was filled with agates and translucent stones. Jody passed on. He lifted a parcel to his nose.
Tobacco.
For your paw, from Turkey.
Why, Oliver.
Penny opened it, marveling. The rich aroma drifted across the room.
Why, Oliver, I can't remember when I've had me a present.
Jody pinched a long, narrow bundle. It was heavy and metallic.
This is it.
You can't tell without seeing it.
Jody unwrapped the bundle madly. A hunting knife fell to the floor. The blade was keen and shining. Jody stared.
Not a knife. Oliver.
Now, if you'd rather have one of them ground-down files like your pa has...
Jody pounced. He swung the long blade to catch the light.
There ain't nobody in the scrub, he said, has got such as that. Not even the foresters has got such a knife.
That's what I figured. We can't let them blackbeards get ahead of us.
Jody looked at the small flannel-swathed parcel Oliver held in one hand. He was torn between Oliver and the foresters. He burst out.
Oliver, Lem Forrester says Twink Weatherby is his gal.
Oliver laughed and tossed the parcel from one hand to the other. He said,
No Forrester ever told the truth. Nobody takes my gal away from me.
Jody felt a wave of relief. He had told both Grandma and Oliver and washed his conscience clear, and Oliver wasn't disturbed. Then a memory came to him of Lem's dark face, brooding and sullen, as he scraped the strings of his fiddle. He put the picture from him. He sunk himself in the treasures his friend had brought home from far places across the sea. Grandma, he noticed, didn't touch her plate at breakfast. She kept Oliver's filled. Her bright eyes hovered over her son like hungry swallows. Oliver sat tall and straight at the table. His skin was bronzed where his shirt was open over his lean throat. His hair was sunburned with a red light in it. His eyes were the color which Jody imagined was the color of the sea, gray-blue with a flashing of green. Jody ran his hand over his own snub nose and freckled skin. He felt surreptitiously across the back of his head, where the straw-colored drake's tails stuck out stiffly. He was immensely dissatisfied with himself. He asked,
Grandma, was Oliver born good-looking?
Penny said, I can answer that. I can remember when he was uglier than you and me both.
Oliver said complacently,
You'll grow up handsome as I am, Jody, if that's what's bothering you.
Just half as handsome as do, he said.
Oliver said,
I'll call you in to tell that to my gal today.
Grandma wrinkled her nose.
Sailors belong to do their courting before they come home, she said.
From what I hear, Penny offered, sailors don't never quit courting.
How about you, Jody? Oliver asked. You got a sweetheart yet? Penny said,
Why, ain't you heerd, Oliver? Jody's sweet on Eulalie Boyles.
Jody felt a murderous fury creep over him. He wanted to roar like the foresters and frighten everyone with his rage. He stuttered.
I hate girls. I hate Eulalie most of all.
Oliver said innocently,
Why? What's the matter with her?
I hate her old twitchy nose. She looks like a rabbit.
Oliver and Penny shouted and slapped each other.
Grandma said, Now quit tormenting the boy, both of you. Can't you remember that fur back yourselves?
His venom melted under his gratitude to her. Grandma was the only one who ever stood up for him. No, he thought, that wasn't true. Penny himself usually helped him fight his battles. When his mother was unreasonable, Penny always said,
Leave him be, Ori. I remember when I were a boy.
It came to him that his father only teased him here, in the hands of friends. When he needed help, Penny never failed him. He grinned. He said to his father,
I just dare you to tell Ma I got a gal.
She'd rare worse'n if I had me a varmint.
Grandma said, Your ma rares at you, do she? At me and Pa both, worse at Pa. She don't appreciate him, she said. She just don't know any better, she sighed. A woman has got to love a bad man once or twice in her life to be thankful for a good one.
Penny stared modestly at the floor. Jody was consumed with curiosity as to whether Mr. Hutto had been good or bad. He dared not ask. At any rate, Mr. Hutto had been so long dead that he supposed it no longer mattered. Oliver rose and stretched his long legs. Grandma said,
You leaving me the very minute you get home?
Just for a little while, I got to go around and get acquainted in the neighborhood again.
That little yellow-headed twink, eh?
Sure.
He leaned over her and tousled her curls.
Penny, you all ain't going home today. We got to do our trading and head for the scrub, Oliver. I hate it. I hate to miss the Saturday frolic. We come on a Friday so's to get our venison to boils in time for the north boat today. And 'tain't right to leave Ori alone too long.
No, Grandma said. A panther might get her.
Penny looked at her quickly, but she was arranging the folds of her apron with great care. Oliver said,
Well, see you over the river.
He was gone, slapping his sailor's cap on the back of his head. His whistle sounded after him. Jody was desolate. Something would happen to keep him from hearing Oliver's tales. He could feel it. He would have liked to sit on the river bank all morning while Oliver yarned. He had never had enough. Oliver told a tale or two, and someone came, or Oliver stopped to do something else and never finished.
I ain't never yet had me a bait of stories, he said.
Grandma said,
I've never had 'em long enough neither.
Penny loitered over his leaving.
I hate to leave, he said, particular now Oliver's here.
I miss Oliver worse, she said, when he's here and away from me, than when he's at sea.
Jody said,
It's Twink. It's gals does it. I don't never aim to have no gal.
He was resentful of Oliver's leaving them. The four of them made a close community, and Oliver had torn it to tatters. Penny basked in the peace of the cottage. He filled his pipe again and again with the foreign tobacco. He said,
I do hate it, but we got to go. We got our trading to do, and it's a fur piece home afoot.
Jody walked along the river bank and threw sticks for fluff. He saw Easy Ozell running toward the cottage. Easy called,
Get your paw, quick! Don't let Miss Otto hear!
Jody ran through the garden and called his father. Penny came outside. Easy panted,
Oliver's fighting the foresters! He took a crack at Lem outside the store, and all them fighting foresters come down on him. They're killing him.
Penny ran for the store. Jody couldn't keep up with him. Easy trailed behind both of them. Penny called over his shoulder,
I hope we can settle it before Grandma gets into it with a gun.
Jody called,
Pa, we fighting for Oliver?
We're fighting for whoever's taking a licking, and that's Oliver.
Jody's brain whirled like a windmill. He said,
Pa, you said no man couldn't live on Baxter's Island without the foresters was his friends.
I said so, but I ain't going to see Oliver hurt.
Jody was numb. It seemed to him that Oliver deserved his punishment. He'd gone away and left them to see a girl. He was almost glad the foresters were after him. Perhaps Oliver would come home from the fight and be done with his nonsense.
Twink Weatherby!
Jody spat into the sand. He thought of Fodderwing. He couldn't bear never to be friends with him again. He called to his father's back.
I ain't going to fight for Oliver.
Penny didn't answer. His short legs churned. The fight was in the sandy road in front of the Boyle's store. A cloud of dust rose ahead, like a whirlwind in the heat of summer. Jody heard the shouting of the watchers before he could make out the figures of the fighters. All of Volusia was there. Penny panted.
That white possum crowd don't care who's killed, long as they get to see a fight.
Jody saw Twink Weatherby on the outer circle. Men and women all called her pretty, but he wanted to tear out her soft yellow curls one by one. Her small pointed face was white. Her wide blue eyes were fixed on the fighters. She twisted a handkerchief around and around in her fingers. Penny pushed his way through the crowd. Jody followed behind him. He clutched at his father's shirt. It was true. The Foresters were killing Oliver. Oliver was fighting three of them at once, Lem and Millwheel and Buck. He looked like a buck deer Jody had once seen, wounded and bleeding, with the dogs tearing flesh from its throat and shoulders. Blood and sand covered his face. He was boxing warily, trying to take on one Forester at a time. Lem and Buck rushed in on him together. Jody heard a heavy fist crack against bone. Oliver dropped in the sand. The crowd roared. Jody's mind whirled in confusion. Oliver deserved it for leaving the cottage and going to a girl. But three against one was never fair. Even when the dogs bayed a bear or panther, it seemed to him an uneven matter. The Foresters, his mother said, were black-hearted. He had never believed her. They sang and drank and frolicked and guffawed. They fed him lavishly and slapped him on the back and gave him fodder wing to play with. Was this black-hearted for three to fight together against one? Yet Millwheel and Buck were fighting for Lem, keeping his girl for him. Wasn't that good? Was that not loyal? Oliver came to his knees, then wavered to his feet. He smiled through the dirt and blood. Jody's stomach turned over. Oliver was being killed. Jody jumped on Lem's back. He clawed at his neck and thumped his head. Lem shook him off and turned and sent him sprawling, his face stung from the impact of the big hand. His hip ached from the fall. Lem snapped.
"You keep outin' this, you little panther."
Penny called loudly.
"Who's judging this fight?"
Lem said.
"We're judging it."
Penny pushed in front of him. His voice was high against the shouting.
"If it take three men to whop one, I say that one is the better man."
Lem advanced on him. He said,
"I'm of no mind to kill you, Penny Baxter, but I'll smack you flat as a skeeter if you don't get out in my way."
Penny said, "Fair's fair. If you aim to kill Oliver, shoot him honest and hang for murder. But be men." Buck shuffled his feet in the sand. He said,
"Way to fit 'em one at a time, but he lit right in."
Penny pressed his advantage.
"Whose fight is it? Who done what to who?"
Lem said,
"He come back stealing, that's what he done."
Oliver wiped his sleeve across his face. He said,
"It's Lem that tried to steal."
"Steal what?" Penny pounded one fist inside the other.
"Hounds, hogs, guns, or horses?"
On the outer rim, Twink Weatherby began to cry. Oliver said in a low voice,
"This is no place to tell it, Penny." "Then be this the place to fight it out, like a pack of dogs fighting in the road? You two fellers fight it out alone another day."
Oliver said,
"I'll fight a man anywhere that says what Lem said."
Lem said,
"And I'll say it again."
They started together. Penny pushed between them. He seemed to Jody like a small, stout pine tree bending against a hurricane. The crowd roared. Lem drew back his fist and struck Oliver over Penny's head. The blow sounded like the crack of a rifle. Oliver crumpled like a rag doll to the sand and lay still. Penny brought his knuckles under Lem's jaw. Buck and Millwheel came at him from the sides. Lem sunk his fist in Penny's ribs. Jody moved with a fury that caught him up from the outside like a strong wind. He sunk his teeth in Lem's wrist. He kicked the big shins. Lem turned like a bear annoyed by a puppy. He knocked Jody clear of his feet. It seemed to him that Lem struck him again in midair. He saw Oliver sway to his feet. He saw Penny's arms swinging like flails. He heard a roaring. It was close at first, then it faded. He dropped into blackness. Chapter 13. Jody thought,
"I dreamed the fighting."
He stared at the ceiling in Grandma Hutto's spare bedroom. A freight steamer was thrashing upstream. He heard the side wheel paddles drinking the swift current of the river. They gulped great wet mouthfuls and let it spill out again. The steamer blew for the Volusia landing. He must certainly have only now awakened in the morning. The steamer's chugging filled the riverbed and beat against the western wall that was the scrub. He had had a nightmare about Oliver Hutto, coming home to fight the foresters. He turned his head to look out of the window and watch the passing vessel. A sharp pain shot through his neck and shoulder. He could only turn his head part way. Memory went through him, thrusting like the pain. He thought, the fighting was true. It was afternoon. The sun shone in the west across the river. A bright band lay across the counterpane. The pain stopped, but he felt faint and dizzy. There was movement in the room. A rocker creaked. Grandma Hutto said, his eyes are open. He tried to turn his head toward her voice, but couldn't, without pain. She leaned over him. He said,
hey, Grandma.
She spoke not to him, but to his father.
He's tough as you. He's all right.
Penny appeared on the other side of the bed. One wrist was bandaged, and one eye was black. He grinned at Jody. He said,
we was a big help, you and me.
A cold, wet cloth slipped from Jody's forehead. Grandma took it away and laid her hand in its place. She reached her fingers back of his head and felt carefully for the source of pain. It was in his left jaw, where Lem had struck him, and in the back of his head, where he'd hit the sand. It eased under her slow manipulation. She said,
say something so I know your brains ain't jellied. I can't think of nothing to say, he added. Ain't it past dinner time?
Penny said,
the only serious hurt could come to him is likely his belly.
He said,
I ain't hungry. I just see the sun and I was wondering.
She said,
that's all right, Pumpkin. He asked, where's Oliver? In the bed. Is he bad hurted?
Not bad enough to learn him sense.
I don't know now, Penny said. One more clip, and he'd not have had much left to learn with.
Anyway, he spoiled his pretty looks, so no yellow-headed thing'll look at him for a while.
You women is right smart hard on one another, Penny said. Seems to me 'twas Oliver and Lem done most of the looking.
Grandma rolled up the cold cloth and left the bedroom. Penny said,
'twa'n't nowhere's fair getting a young'un knocked dead. But I'm proud you was man enough to mix in it when you see a friend in trouble.
Jody stared at the sunlight. He thought,
the foresters are my friends, too.
As though he read his thoughts, Penny said,
this'll likely end neighboring with the foresters.
A twinge of pain shot from Jody's head into the pit of his stomach. He couldn't give up Fodder Wing.
He decided he would slip away for some time and call to Fodder Wing from the bushes.
He pictured the secret meeting. Perhaps they would be discovered and Lem would whip them both to death. Then Oliver would be sorry he had fought because of Twink Weatherby. Jody was more resentful at Oliver than at the foresters. Something of Oliver that had belonged to him and to Grandma had been taken away and given to the yellow-headed girl who wrung her hands over the fighting. Yet if he had to do it over again, he would still have to help Oliver. He recalled a wildcat that the dogs had torn to pieces. Wildcats deserved what they got. Yet at one moment, when the snarling mouth had gaped wide in agony and the evil eyes had filmed in dying, he had been stabbed with pity. He had cried out, longing to help the creature in its torture. Too much pain was unjust. Too many against one were unjust. That was why it had been necessary to fight for Oliver, even if it lost him Fodder Wing. He closed his eyes, satisfied. Everything was all right when he understood it. Grandma came into the bedroom with a tray.
Now, Pumpkin, See, can you sit up?
Penny slipped his hands under the pillow, and Jody eased up slowly. He was stiff and sore, but he felt no worse than the time he had fallen out of the chinaberry tree. Penny said,
I wished poor Oliver had got off this light.
Grandma said,
He's lucky he didn't get his fine nose broke.
He ate his way painfully toward a plate of gingerbread. Because of the soreness, he was forced to leave a square. He looked at it. Grandma said,
I'll save that for you.
Penny said,
Ain't it a treat to have a woman read your mind and then agrees with it?
I mean.
Jody lay against his pillow. Violence broke into peace and tore the world to tatters, and then suddenly, all was peaceful again. Penny said,
I got to be pushing on. Ori'll be raring.
He stood in the doorway. He was a little stooped. He looked lonely. Jody said,
I want to go with you.
Penny's face grew bright. He said,
Now, boy, he was eager. You sure you're fitting? Tell you what I'll do. Barry Boyle's old mare. The one that goes home alone. We'll ride her back and turn her loose.
Grandma said,
Aura will feel better about him if he goes with you. I know what happens to Oliver where I can see him ain't near as bad as what happens out of my side.
Jody eased his body from the bed. He was dizzy. His head felt large and full. He was tempted to sink back on the smooth sheets. Penny said,
Jody's a man if I do say it.
He straightened and went to the door.
Must I say goodbye to Oliver?
Why, sure. But don't let on how bad he looks. He's proud.
He went to Oliver's room. Oliver's eyes were swollen shut, as though he had fallen in a nest of wasps. One cheek was purple. A white bandage was tied around his head. His lips were puffed. The fine sailor was laid low, and all because of Twink Weatherby. Jody said,
Goodbye, Oliver.
Oliver didn't answer. Jody softened.
I'm sorry Pa and me didn't get there quicker.
Oliver said,
Come here.
Jody went close to the bed.
You do something for me. Go tell Twink I'll meet her at the old grove Tuesday about dusk dark.
Jody was frozen. He burst out.
I won't do it. I hate her. Old yellow-headed something. All right. I'll send easy.
Jody scuffled the rug with one foot. Oliver said,
I thought you were my friend.
Being friends, he thought, was a nuisance. Then he remembered the hunting knife and was filled with gratitude and shame.
Well, all right. I don't want to, but I'll tell her.
Oliver laughed from the bed. He would laugh, Jody thought, if he lay dying.
Goodbye, Oliver. Goodbye, Jody.
He left the room. Grandma was waiting. He said,
It come out kind of disappointing, didn't it, Grandma? Oliver fighting and all.
Penny said,
Boy, be civil.
Grandma said,
The truth's civil enough. When bears with sore heads go courting, there's always trouble, as long as this is the end and not the beginning.
Penny said,
You know where to send for me.
They went down the path through the garden. Jody looked back over his shoulder. Grandma stood waving after them. Penny stopped at Boyle's store for his supplies and for his forequarter of venison. Boyle's was willing to lend the mare if Penny would strap a length of good buckskin for bootlaces on the saddle when he sent her home in payment. The supplies, flour and coffee and powder and lead and shell cases for the new gun, were dropped in a sack. Boyle's went to his lot and brought out the mare, saddled with a blanket.
"Don't turn her loose till morning," he said. She can outrun a wolf, but I wouldn't want a panther dropping on her.
Penny turned away to lift his sacks. Jody sidled close to the storekeeper. He was reluctant to have his father know Oliver's secret. He whispered,
"I got to see Twink Weatherby. Where does she live?"
"What you want of her?"
"I got something to say to her."
Boyle said,
"A heap of us have something to say to her. Well, you'll have to bide your time. The young lady's put a kerchief on her yellow curls and slipped off on the freight boat to Sanford."
Jody felt a satisfaction as great as though he had driven her away himself. He borrowed a piece of paper and a thick pencil and printed a note to Oliver. It was laborious work, for his father's teachings had been supplemented only by one brief winter of instruction from the itinerant school teacher. He wrote,
"Dear Oliver, your old twink has done goed up the river. I'm glad. Your friend, Jody."
He read it over. He decided in favor of a greater kindness. He crossed out, "I'm glad," and wrote in its place, "I'm sorry." He felt virtuous. Something of the old glow for Oliver came back to him. Perhaps he could still hear his tales. Crossing to the scrub side of the ferry, he stared down into the swift river. His thoughts were as turbulent as the current. Oliver had never failed him before. The Foresters were, after all, as rough as his mother insisted. He felt deserted, but he was sure Fodderwing wouldn't change. The gentle mind and the twisted body would be as aloof from the quarrel as his own. His father, of course, stood as unchangeable as the earth. Chapter 14. The quail were nesting. The fluted covey call had been silent for some time. The coveys were dividing into pairs. The cocks were sounding the mating call, clear and sweet and insistent. One day in mid-June, Jody saw a cock and a hen run from the grape arbor with the scuttling hurry of paternity. He was wise enough not to follow them, but prowled about under the arbor until he found the nest. It held 20 cream-colored eggs. He was careful not to touch them for fear the quail might desert them, as guineas did. A week later, he went to the arbor to look at the progress of the scuppernongs. They were like the smallest pellets of shot, but they were green and sturdy. He lifted a length of vine, imagining the dusty golden grapes in the late summer. There was a stirring at his feet, as though the grass had exploded. The setting was hatched. The young quail, each no bigger than the end of his thumb, scattered like small wind-blown leaves. The mother quail cried out and made alternate sorties after the brood, in defense, and at Jody, in attack. He stood quiet, as his father had taught him to do. The hen gathered her young together and took them away through the tall broom-sage grasses. Jody ran to find his father. Penny was working the field peas.
"Pa, the quail has hatched under the scuppernong, and the grapes is making."
Penny rested on the plow handles. He was wet with sweat. He looked across the field. A hawk flew low, quartering. He said,
"If the hawks don't get the quail and the coons don't get the scuppernongs, we'll have a mighty good meal, about first frost."
Jody said,
"I hate the hawks eating the quail, but I don't some way mind the coons eating the grapes."
"That's because you love quail meat more than you love grapes."
"No, tain't. It's because I hate hawks and I love coons."
"Fodderwing learned you that," Penny said, "with all them pet coons."
"I reckon so."
"The hogs come up yet, boy?"
"Not yet."
Penny frowned.
"I purely hate to think the Foresters has trapped 'em, but they ain't never stayed off so long. If 'twas bears, they wouldn't all be gone to once it."
"I've been as far as the old clearing, Pa, and the tracks goes on west from there."
"Time I get done working these peas, we're just obliged to take Rip and Julie and go track 'em."
"What do we do? Do the Foresters have 'em trapped?"
Whatever we got to do when the time comes.
Ain't you a scared to face the foresters again?
No, for I'm right.
Would you be scared if you was wrong?
If I was wrong, I wouldn't face them.
What do we do? Do we get beat up again?
Take it for our share and go on.
I'd rather let the foresters keep the hogs.
And go without meat? A black eye'll quiet down a heap quicker'n a empty belly. You want to beg off going? He hesitated.
I reckon not.
Penny turned back to his cultivating.
Then go tell your ma, please, ma'am, to fix us early supper.
Jody went to the house. His mother was rocking and sewing on the shady porch. A small blue-bellied lizard scuttled from under her chair. Jody grinned, thinking how quickly she would heave her frame from the rocker if she had known.
Please, ma'am, Pa says to fix the supper right now. We got to go hunting the hogs. About time.
She finished her seam leisurely. He dropped on the step below her.
We likely got to face the foresters, Ma, if they got 'em trapped.
Well, face 'em, black-hearted thieves.
He stared at her. She had been furious at both him and his father because they had fought the foresters at Volusia. He said,
We're like to get beat up and bloodied again, Ma.
She folded her sewing impatiently.
Well, pity on us. We got to have our meat. Who'll get it if you don't?
She went into the house. He heard her thumping the lid on the Dutch oven. He was confused. His mother talked much of duty. He had always hated the very word. Why was it his duty to let the foresters maul him again to recover the hogs, if it hadn't been his duty to let them maul him in order to help his friend Oliver? Seemed more honorable to him to bleed for a friend than for a side of bacon. He sat idly, listening to the fluttered whirring of mockingbirds in the chinaberry. The jays were chasing the redbirds out of the mulberry trees. There was a squabble for food even in the safety of the clearing. But it seemed to him there was always enough here for everyone. There was food and shelter for father and mother and son, for old Caesar, for Trixie and her spotted calf, for Rip and Julia, for the chickens, clucking and crowing and scratching, for the hogs grunting in at evening for a cob of corn, for the songbirds in the trees and the quail nesting under the arbor. For all of these, there was enough at the clearing. Out in the scrub, the war waged ceaselessly. The bears and wolves and panthers and wildcats all preyed on the deer. Bears even ate the cubs of other bears, all meat being to their maws the same. Squirrels and wood rats, possums and coons must all scurry for their lives. Birds and small furred creatures cowered in the shadow of hawk and owl. But the clearing was safe. Penny kept it so, with his good fences, with Rip and old Julia, with a wariness that seemed to Jody to be unsleeping. Sometimes he heard a rustling in the night and the door opened and closed, and it was Penny, slipping back to his bed from a silent hunt for some marauder. There was intrusion back and forth as well. The Baxters went into the scrub for flesh of deer and hide of wildcat, and the predatory animals and the hungry varmints came into the clearing when they could. The clearing was ringed around with hunger. It was a fortress in the scrub. Baxter's Island was an island of plenty in a hungry sea. He heard the trace chains clanking. Penny was returning to the lot along the fence row. Jody ran ahead to open the lot gates for him. He helped with the unharnessing. He climbed the ladder into the loft and pitched down a forkful of cowpea hay into Caesar's manger. There was no more corn and wouldn't be until the summer's crop was made. He found a pile of hay with the dried peas still clinging to it and threw it down for Trixie. There would be more milk in the morning for both the Baxters and the spotted calf. The calf was inclined to leanness, for Penny was weaning it from the cow. The loft was heavy with heat, trapped under the thick, hand-hewn slabs of the shingled roof. The hay crackled with a dry sweetness. It tickled his nostrils. He lay down in it for a moment, abandoning himself to the resiliency. He was no more than comfortable when he heard his mother call. He scrambled down from the loft. Penny had finished milking. They went to the house together. Supper was on the table. There were only clabber and cornbread, but there was enough. Ma Baxter said,
"You fellers try to get a shot at some meat while you're off."
Penny nodded. "I'm toting my gun a purpose." They set off to the west. The sun was still above the treetops. There had been no rain for several days, but now cumulus clouds were piled low in the north and west. From the east and south, a steel grayness crept toward the glaring brilliance of the west. Penny said,
"A good rain today had near about leave us lay by the corn."
There was no breeze. The air lay over the road like a thick down comforter. It seemed to Jody that it was something that could be pushed away if he could struggle up through it. The sand burned his bare, calloused soles. Rip and Julia walked listlessly, heads down, tails sagging, their tongues dripping from open jaws. It wasn't easy to follow the tracks of the hogs where the loose soil had been so long dry. Penny's eye was keener here than Julia's nose. The hogs had fed through the blackjack, crossed the abandoned clearing, and headed for the prairie where lily roots could be dug and pools of cool water could be muddied and wallowed in. They didn't range so far when food could be had close at home. Now was a barren and parlous season. There was no mast yet of pine or oak or hickory, except what could be rooted deep under the leaves from last year's falling. Palmetto berries were still too green, even for the undiscerning taste of a hog. 3 miles from Baxter's Island, Penny crouched to examine the trail. He picked up a grain of corn and turned it over in his hand. He pointed to the hoof marks of a horse.
"They baited them hogs," he said.
He straightened his back. His face was grave. Jody watched him anxiously.
"Well, son, we're obliged to follow."
"Clear to the foresters?"
"Clear to wheresomever the hogs be. Mout be we'll find 'em in a pen somewheres."
The trail zigzagged where the hogs had weaved back and forth for the scattered corn. Penny said,
"I can understand the foresters fighting Oliver, and I can understand them romping on you and me, but I'd be dogged if I can understand cold-out meanness."
A quarter of a mile beyond stood a rough hog trap. It had been sprung, but the pen was now empty. It was made of untrimmed saplings, and a limber sapling had been baited to spring the gate behind the crowding hogs.
"Them rascals was nearby waiting," Penny said. "That pen wouldn't hold a hog no time."
A cart had turned around in the sand to the right of the pen. The wheel tracks led down a dim scrub road toward Forester's Island. Penny said,
"All right, boy, here's our way."
The sun was near the horizon. The cumulus clouds were white puffballs stained with the red and yellow wash of the sunset. The south was filled with darkness, like the smoke of gunpowder. A chill air moved across the scrub and was gone, as though a vast being had blown a cold breath and then passed by. Jody shivered and was grateful for the hot air that fell in behind it. A wild grapevine trailed across the thin, rutted road. Penny leaned to pull it aside. He said,
"When there's trouble waiting for you, you just as good go to meet it."
The rattler struck him from under the grapevine without warning. Jody saw the flash, blurred as a shadow, swifter than a marten, surer than the slashing claws of a bear. He saw his father stagger backward under the force of the blow. He heard him give a cry. He wanted to step back, too. He wanted to cry out with all his voice. He stood rooted to the sand and couldn't make a sound. It was lightning that had struck, and not a rattler. It was a branch that broke. It was a bird that flew. It was a rabbit running. Penny shouted,
"Get back! Hold the dogs!"
The voice released him. He dropped back and clutched the dogs by the scruff of their necks. He saw the mottled shadow lift its flat head knee-high. The head swung from side to side, following his father's slow motions. He heard the rattles hum. The dogs heard. They winded. The fur stood stiff on their bodies. Old Julia whined and twisted out of his hand. She turned and slunk down the trail. Her long tail clung to her hindquarters. Rip reared on his hind feet, barking.